I was playing down at Chile, and I was completely lost. Like my golf swing just wasn't there, and it was frustrating because like it felt really good and everything, you know, it was technically sound, but when I get out on the golf course, it's just not there. And I was just like, screw it, I'm just gonna, you know, go back to what I'm comfortable with and doing that. And that's something that never leaves you, I would say, like, you know, the quest to be perfect or whatever, but that's also been the downfall of a lot of good golfers.
This is the Tournament Code.
Thank you for taking the time to join us today, Keenan. We know a little bit about you. We're excited to talk about your journey. I don't remember how many years ago I saw this older Twitter or X account. I think it was like a year or two about your game, and I followed it some. And then obviously now we're getting to talk to you. Before we get to talking, PuttView Books are our sponsor. They keep the lights on. And so Jack has the PuttView Books opening tee shot is what we call it. He has a trivia question. I don't know the answer. You don't know the answer. Jack knows the answer. So Jack, why don't you drop us that question and see how we do?
This is the third time that Scottie Scheffler has successfully defended a title on the PGA Tour. Over the last 30 years, only two players have more. Who are they, and how many times have they successfully defended a title?
So there's two other players you're saying?
Two other players in the last 30 years.
Have done it three times.
Yes. Or no, sorry. Sorry. To like defend a title. So Scottie has defended the Memorial, Phoenix, and another event, having three title defenses. What other players have done it more than that?
I assume Tiger has to be one of them.
Tiger is one. We'll guess his number. And then there's one other that has five. He's done it five times.
Wow, five times. What was the dates on it?
How the far last back? 30 years.
That's 30 years. Okay.
I might go out on a limb here and say Vijay Singh.
It is not Vijay. I'd be interested to see there, though, because he did, especially in those early 2000s, he was beating it up on tour. I think that's a good guess, but it's not Vijay.
I don't know. You got any guesses, Daniel?
I don't know. That's a tough. Has Jordan done anything, Spieth?
No. It's not Jordan.
Well, it's been a while. I mean,
it's true.
So I figured, hey. I'm
trying to think early 2000s.
It's definitely not Phil.
It is Phil.
No.
It is. Wow.
So Phil's done it five times. Scotty's done it three times. How many times has Tiger done it? This might be one of even the more incredible Tiger stats, and there's a trunk load of those.
I bet 12.
23 times he just successfully defended a title, which I guess makes sense. Like Bay Hill and Torrey Pines, it felt like he won every year, but that is absolutely insane.
Even then.
I mean,
that's amazing.
Like, what has Rory won in his career? Rory's probably won in his career maybe 25, 26 times, and Tiger's literally done that in just defending titles. That's insane.
That's nuts, man.
Yeah,
that is
wild.
Nuts. Well, appreciate you dropping that knowledge bomb on us, Jack. Keenan, we appreciate you taking the time because it's Sunday night and you just finished up a practice round for sectionals. So before we go into, you know, background and all that fun stuff, tell us a little bit about where you're playing sectionals, your prep work for sectionals, and what locals was like for you.
Okay, so I'm at Woodmont Country Club right now up in Rockville, Maryland. Absolutely fantastic golf course. I've played up here one time before, so I kind of wanted to go back. As far as like prep work and stuff, I mean, I'm right in the middle of the season right now, so I've been playing a lot. So it's a lot of just more of the same stuff. It's kind of, you know, it's just another tournament, really. I had a week off because my sister got married, and found a date that worked with my schedule. I went up to Knoxville and played, and kind of the same conditions that we're going to have tomorrow. It was really, really wet, and you know, ball wasn't rolling out or anything. Greens were soft, and I didn't play great or anything. I think I shot four under that day. That was pretty much all it called for, just because of the conditions and stuff. I just, you know, played pretty solid, made a couple putts, and was able to get through that. So yeah, now I'm here, and tomorrow's going to be a long day, but it's going to be a fun one. So I'm looking forward to it. this is always, it's a long day, but this is a, it's a fun day.
Obviously it's golf's longest day. And I think we have a lot of college players who listen or are familiar with the, you know, the 36 hole grind. What is your mentality going into like a day where you're going to be out there for 12 hours, kind of being locked in all the time? Like,
yeah, how
about that.
I mean, it's obviously it that's a different headspace than you really ever have to be any other time. I know we did it in college a decent amount, but you know, since it's a 36 hole qualifier, it's essentially just, you know, a very long Monday qualifier. But with that, since it's 36 holes, you don't have to be as aggressive. You have a lot more opportunities throughout the day that are going to just pop up. So it's not like you got to be firing at pins and stuff like that, especially because these courses, they try to make them US Open-esque. It's not like, it's obviously not quite the same, but they do try to make it pretty hard. The rough's really thick out here. So, you know, placement is going to be very important. So yeah, you just kind of got to plot your way through it and hope you make a couple putts and just miss it in the right spots throughout the day. And then hopefully at the end of the day, you know, you got a number that's going to get through.
Absolutely. When it comes to, you played a practice round today, I think one of the big things that juniors, college players, and then obviously some even pros we've talked to said, yeah, they still haven't exactly figured out what the best way to do is. When it comes to, you know, doing prep work on a course, going and playing a practice round, what do you pay attention to? What are you recording? Like, do you have yardage books you're writing things down? And what is your process look like actually getting on the course, getting notes down?
I mean, that's a good question. That's something that has definitely evolved for me throughout the years, just, you know, learning about the process of going through the practice days, especially out on the Korn Ferry Tour. It's so much different than any other practice that you do because you are able to get out there 3 days in advance. But I mean, the big things I'm trying to figure out are off the tee, obviously placement. Where do I want to be to give me the biggest advantage going into the green? So, you know, that's going to involve, am I going to want to avoid a fairway bunker by laying up short of it? Am I able to take it over it? That kind of stuff. You know, I'm usually try to not flirt with bunkers. I mean, that's pretty much what everybody does. Every once in a while you'll run into a hole where, you know, you don't have a choice but to do it. But yeah, so that off the tee, going into the holes, it's a little bit different. One thing that I've kind of picked up on out here is that short siding, you know, everybody always talks about how short siding is, you know, the death of you. It's not necessarily the case all the time. Sometimes short siding is actually the best miss because you have a very short, easy chip. Obviously, that's not always the case. It's very course dependent on the conditions and everything. So that's something that you look at. And then around the green is by far the most important part week to week, just because conditions change so much. So out here, it's really soft. We can be more aggressive around the greens and firing to pins because of it being soft. But most weeks it's not like that. So you got to be meticulous about where you're hitting it. And, you know, just how much check is the ball going to have this week on it? And like that stuff you are able to pick up pretty quickly on. But the biggest thing out here is that they love to kind of trick you a little bit, per se, in the practice rounds, because it'll generally be a lot softer than it is during the tournament. So you'll just have to adjust to that throughout the week and know that's to be expected unless there's, you know, some weather that comes in. So it's, you know, I feel like I turn into a weatherman a little bit more because I'm always, you know, looking at the weather and I'm way more informed on that as opposed to like when I was younger, you know, like, I mean, I didn't look at the wind or, you know, what the, you know, the temperature was going to be or anything like that. But, you know, when you're trying to save a shot around, all that stuff comes into play. So yeah, I think that's the basic gist of it. And then obviously the green speeds, that's another thing, like that changes. They always make them faster. So, you know that's to be expected. But yeah, I mean, speed and knowing how the greens are going to react, I would say, is the most important thing.
Interesting question about wind. When you're taking note of the wind before the round and then you're getting out onto the course, do you play wind? Like, you get out on the course, do you just feel where the wind's coming from? Do you play off of where the wind was on, like, the weather report and say, okay, even if it feels a little different, I'm guessing it's that? What do you do?
This is actually kind of a funny question for me because I've fought with multiple people on this. There's different thought processes on the wind stuff. There's some people that are very strict on just going off of the forecast and the direction of the forecast. I'm not one of those people because, I mean, you can clearly see the wind blowing in different directions sometimes. And, like, that's, you know, when you're playing golf and specifically like a course that's tree lined, the wind is going to swirl. And the wind is always not going to be where it says it's going to be. And so, yes, I look at the forecast, and that is going to be the dominant thing for the day usually. But I believe that you can't stick to that just strictly because the wind does like to swirl in trees and stuff. And obviously you're going to have some shots sometimes where, I mean, the trees could be completely blocking the wind, so you don't feel it. So I'd say it's a little bit of a mix. It is, for me, a little bit feel related, but that's also just how I play golf. I'm very much a feel player. So, yeah, that's kind of how I go about that.
What does it mean to you to be a feel player? What does that look like, and how does that impact instruction and everything else?
I think the biggest thing that I've learned throughout the years is, I mean, I grew up playing golf from a very early age. So growing up, you know, I was just learning to hit the ball and stuff. And with that, there's some tendencies that I have with my golf game that are just never going to go away. They're ingrained in me, and that's how I play. And a lot of those things I would kind of consider a little bit more feel. So, like, when I was growing up, I liked to hit a big high draw, and that was like the only shot I could hit. So that's kind of ingrained in me. I'm always going to have that natural draw shot shape. And, you know, I've tried to go away from that in the past and become the, like, perfect player, you know, where, you know, everything is technically sound. And I've just figured out that doesn't work for me because that's just not who I am. So, like, yeah, with the swing stuff, that's kind of how that is. And honestly, the biggest one for me is putting, because I grew up putting, like, really kind of funky. I'm left-handed, so I love Phil growing up. And, like, I always try to, like, forward press it like he does and all that stuff. So that's just, like, you know, I just kind of got to roll with it. I don't try to get too technical with that stuff, and it's just more of a reaction process. So, yeah, that's what I would say.
As you've progressed up the ranks, has there been times where you've tried to get more technical, or people have come into your kind of instruction sphere and that hasn't worked out as well?
Oh yeah, like 100%. I mean, perfect example is, like, leading up to the beginning of this year. It's something that never really goes away, because obviously there's always things you're going to try to nitpick and get better at. But, you know, I was really trying to get a little bit more technically sound on, like, the data points. So, you know, like the TrackMan stuff, you know, trying to find all the paths and the, you know, all those numbers that were trying to align a little bit more. And I was playing down at Chile, and I was completely lost. Like, my golf swing just wasn't there. And it was frustrating because, like, it felt really good and everything, you know, was technically sound. But when I get out on the golf course, it's just not there. And I was just like, screw it. I'm just going to, you know, go back to what I'm comfortable with and doing that. And that's something that never leaves you, I would say. Like, you know, the quest to be perfect or whatever. But that's also been the downfall of a lot of good golfers. So, yeah. And then, like, another point to that I would add is teachers. Some teachers, you know, have a thought process of trying to kind of get everybody in the same spots, and then some kind of try to do your swing a little bit more. So, I mean, you have to know what kind of player you are and what you're looking for. But for me, like, I like working with guys that kind of are going to work with what I got.
Absolutely. When it comes to getting better, you kind of mentioned the tension there when you want to get better. Most of the time, something has to change. And sometimes you change things and it doesn't work out. How do you analyze or parse information or parse changes and say, okay, this change is a change that I'm going to stick with and I'm going to try to build on, and other changes, okay, it's just not going to work for me? And are there any, you know, changes that you've made that you're like, oh, wow, this leveled me up a little bit?
I think an important thing to look at with stuff like that is your stats. If there is a glaring issue, there's probably going to be something that needs to change. But, you know, every good golfer, you know, every college, high school, whatever, you've got something that makes you good, whatever that is. You know, it could be driving, chipping, putting, whatever. So, like, generally, I would say everybody's got a strong suit, and you probably don't want to mess around with it. Like, obviously, you always want to get better, but you don't want to try to reinvent the wheel or anything with it, because there's a reason that you're at the place you're at, you know? So, like, yeah, that for me, that's kind of the way I've been. Like, my chipping has not been good recently. My stats are not good. So, like, that's an issue that I have to fix. So I have been exploring that a little bit more and trying different approaches to try to get that better. And the only way you're going to figure out if it's working or not is if you're, you know, doing it in tournament rounds. It can feel great when you're practicing, but it's a different thing when you're under the gun. So sometimes you just got to fight through it, figure it out, and it's going to suck for a little bit until it gets better, and then it'll click and you're like, oh, you know, it's a whole lot better now. So, yeah.
So you said you're experimenting with some new chipping techniques. What was kind of your chipping technique that led you to experiment, and what are you currently working on now? This has always been a very hot topic on X these days about, you know, shallow, steep, VSP, and spin loft.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, apparently that's a huge debate right now. I've always been kind of going off of that feel stuff. I've always been really, really good with my hands and higher lofted shots, like soft shots. I'm really good at that shot. Like, lately I've been in the situation where, like, I kind of want to be screwed when I'm chipping so I can, like, hit like a high soft shot, because I'm way more comfortable with that than just hitting your basic chip shot. It's been driving me crazy. So the issue was that I was a little bit too handsy, kind of getting the club in front of my hands a little bit too much to hit that shot. And it was bleeding into just hitting the more normal chip shots. So yeah, I'm trying to get a little bit more vertical, hands in front. Steep, really. And I mean, it's been great. It's a work in progress, and I'm getting there, but it's completely different. And it's radical feeling to me. Like, it's something I'm not used to, but I'm getting to the point now where I'm feeling a lot more comfortable with it. And because of that, I'm able to hit different shots. And you know, the whole point is to, like I said earlier, is save a shot around. And I feel like I'm in a better position to do that now.
What is the top of your bag look like, driver, you know, down a few to your second and third option? And what is your club head speed with driver?
Club head speed, I'm not exactly sure. I usually cruise ball around 180 ball speed. That's like cruising range. I used to hit it a lot further. I kind of got sucked into the distance stuff and hitting it a long way. And then I hurt myself, and I also had no control over my irons and stuff like that. So I backed off on that. And it was a good lesson to learn. But yeah, I fluctuate course dependent on if I'm going to put a mini driver in play or a 3-wood, 4-wood really. And then also 3-iron or X3 hybrid. That's the gapping right now.
Got it. Okay. I'm gonna pick your brain here on a few different questions. I think 180, Jack, correct me if I'm wrong, 180 ball speed would be right around like 119, 120, I think, depending on the strike, which is, you know, above tour average, a very solid number. This is a selfish question. I'm going to ask some other questions. Tell me about how you got hurt, the speed training, et cetera. And the reason I say that is we have obviously this podcast and we have a YouTube that our podcast goes on, and we've been starting to do other things and, you know, experiments on our own golf games, et cetera. And I'm in the middle of I haven't released the first video because I got to wait to see how an MRI turns out. But I'm in between now and December 31st, I have to get to 130 mile per hour max club head speed, or else I got to give $1,000 away to a listener. And so I'm starting the process. I had some random injuries pop up, which I've never seen before. So I want to hear about your speed journey, the injuries, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah. I mean, I tried to pick it up kind of with like, that was becoming like a fad, I would say, you know, like Bryson was hitting it forever and like Phil was kind of getting into that stuff, and distance had always, like, I had always wanted to pick up a little bit more out of school. I mean, I hit it plenty far, but you know, I always wanted to hit it further. And so, yeah, I got into that stuff and just, there wasn't really any speed training involved for me. Like I never did any of the speed sticks or any of that. I just tried to hit the ball as hard as I could. And eventually, like, I figured it out and like found a way to hit it straight and long. And it was cool. But that was about it. You know, it'd be crooked. And like I said, I had no control over my iron game too. My distances were all over the place. And I hurt my right shoulder, which is my lead shoulder. I don't know if it had anything to do with the speed stuff, but it was at the same time. So like that, I mean, it's gotta be what it was. I just think the golf swing is a very unnatural motion, and you know, getting your body to do it perfectly in sync when you're swinging that hard is really, really hard to do. And if you are not in sync, something can get off very quickly, and you know, something's probably gonna pop out of place or something, you know, I don't know. Shoulders seem to be a thing with golfers, shoulders and elbows and knees. So, and like all that stuff, you know, you not only for golf, you just want to keep that for the rest of your life and be good, you know, when you're 60 years old. So I was kind of like, all right, this isn't really worth it anymore.
I get it. I trust me, I'm not going to go into my ailments, but literally 2 weeks ago, sitting at this desk working, and all of a sudden I just can't keep my head up. Like I couldn't sit at all. I had to go lie down. And for the past 2 weeks, had a rough go at it. I'm like, man, honestly, I don't even care that much about playing golf. Like I can't even like roughhouse with my 2-year-old son. I'm just lying there like I'm a terrible dad. I'm a terrible husband. I'm lying because I can't get up and do anything. What was the shoulder injury you had?
So I thought that I had torn my labrum, and that was going to be detrimental. Like I was probably going to quit if that was the case, because that's an awful rehab. And at that point in my career, I hadn't made it on Corn Ferry yet, and I was like, I'm probably just going to quit if that's the case. But it ended up being it was a very mild labrum tear. So I was able to work through it with PT stuff. And then I've also got a little bit of tendonitis, like in my subscap area. So that flares up from time to time, but as long as I'm doing my exercises and stuff, I'm able to keep it in check. But it's not like it's something that's not healed and it's never going to be healed. I'm going to have it for the rest of my life, but it's, you know, I can keep it at bay. So that's kind of where we're at with that.
Very cool. I actually, thinking about it, I think 180 is a little bit higher club head speed than 120. I always mix that up. I think it might be like 120, 122. The only reason I pay attention to that is because I don't hit the ball in the center of the face all as much. And so I got to focus on getting the club head speed up. I don't worry about the ball speed later.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, and that's the other thing. Like I'm not slow by any means. So, it's more important on the iron game and also important to be able to play when you're 40, if you want to keep doing this. So,
especially a lot of the courses, if I remember right, a lot of the courses that you guys play, it doesn't seem like necessarily that some are longer, but you're also playing on some, shorter tracks, and oftentimes on some of the shorter tracks, it pinches in a lot where your driver would end up. So you end up clubbing back a little bit. Tell us about, go ahead.
I was just going to say there's tons of courses that we play that, we don't even hit driver half the time. So it's not even necessary on the PGA Tour. Like that's where, the distance definitely has an advantage, but not on Korn Ferry.
With the mini driver, tell us when you added that to the bag and what your kind of takeaways have been with that.
I guess I put that in about a year ago. Always constant lefty issue is that they don't make the clubs that I want sometimes. And the only one that they make is a 11 and a half degree. So I got to crank it up and it's a shut club face. And I was like, it's weird. I don't like shut club faces and all that stuff. But I did kind of buy into the fad and I was like, I should try it and see what everybody's raving about. And I learned to hit it and it is, it's an incredible tool to have. It's golf course specific, but like I said, a lot of these courses were not hitting driver most of the time anyway. And that club comes into play. Mine probably goes about I can hit it anywhere from 280 to 290 in the air. And there's a lot of courses that we play where that's going to end up just short of the bunkers and in a good position. So it's a huge club for me. I would say I probably put it in play on 60 to 70% of the courses that we play. So when I'm using it, it's great. And that thing goes straight. It's easy to hit. I can hit it off the ground too, if I need to. So it's pretty versatile. There's a reason that, heck, I'd say most guys have them in the bag now. So there's something to it.
Very cool. We got connected through Carrie. We haven't talked kind of your background, but we got connected through Carrie. I'd reached out to them. And also I'd seen a long time ago, as I said, a Twitter account that was following you. And so I followed that for a while. Tell us kind of about tell us about your journey into professional golf. And then also we're curious some about how Carrie works, what that's been like for you, because that's an alternative route that some people take, some people don't take, but it's obviously come around in the past 5 years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, just going off of that, I got connected with Donnie probably about a year ago. I was a little hesitant at first because I had agents in the past that hadn't really done anything for me. And I'm like, I don't need to waste my time on this anymore. I can just kind of do it for myself right now. But he was persistent and he showed me a couple things that they were doing that I really liked. And I love the concept of trying to help the guys playing on mini tours and stuff, because that's where people actually need the help, because the sport is very expensive to play. And you also make no money when you're playing on the mini tours. But with that being said, almost all the guys that are playing on those mini tours are good enough to play on the Korn Ferry Tour. They just, haven't had their break yet. And, it's just the matter of having a good week in Q school and stuff like that to change your life. So the talent's there. That's not the issue. The issue is, being able to fund yourself. And I love the idea of that. And he was able to do a couple of things that helped me personally. And so just kind of rolled with it. And we've been doing that for about a year now. And I mean, I love it. He's top notch, awesome dude. And he's also like, he's gone into the girls game as much as he's gone into the guys game too, which is, I mean, that's cool that he's helping them out too. So it's a awesome concept. Like, I haven't seen anything like that before. And I mean, I hope he keeps on killing it, because it's a pretty cool gig he's got going. What was the first question? Getting into pro golf?
Yeah. Yeah. But first tell us a little bit more about Kerry and like how it, now since we're there on it, tell us about Kerry how it works, like for you, how it works for other players, all that.
Basically, he had this idea of essentially crowdfunding guys in a collective, as opposed to just like singular people, you know, going out and asking for money or whatever, which is hard to do. So what he'll do is he'll get these sponsors and stuff to, you know, give X amount of money and help out everybody and then kind of divvy it up and just, you know, help everybody that is on board and with him. And also, I mean, there's other stuff that he does too. I mean, does kind of work like an agency, and, you know, he'll help me with, you know, like a clothing deal or, you know, something like that. Or just like, I mean, he's had connections that have helped me talk to tournament directors and, you know, get into golf tournaments like that too. So, yeah, it's kind of, it's definitely like a little bit of a agency per se, but also not at the same time, which I like that. And yeah, I mean, he's just right now just trying to help out as many people as possible that need it, which I think that's a great thing.
Very cool. Kind of tell us about getting into pro golf and what that was like. As I said, I found there was an old Twitter account that I followed for a while that followed some of your stuff. I have to pull it up here. I don't think it's tweeting anymore, but I remember seeing that a long time ago and following along. So just kind of tell us about your background and all that.
Going pro was just like the natural progression for me coming out of school. I was a fairly successful collegiate golfer, and I felt like my game was good enough to take it to the next level. So I decided to give it a shot. And I finished in 2018, and I turned pro right after that. And, you know, what that meant for me at that point in time was, you know, playing the mini tour stuff and just, you know, trying to play in some tournaments, get my feet wet, kind of figure out how the whole ordeal works. Because, you know, no one tells you. And there's no book about it or anything. So you got to figure it out yourself, which is definitely tough sometimes. But yeah, so I did that. I played in Q school 1, 2, 3, 4 times before I made it. And yeah, last year was my first full year out there. And so I mean, it was a grind, obviously. I mean, anybody would tell you that. There were some highs and lows. It's definitely not the most fun thing in the world to do. It's just, you know, it's a lot of figuring it out and learning what steps you have to take to progress, but evolve also as a golfer, because your game does have to evolve with the changing circumstances. So yeah, I mean, that's pretty much it. it's just a long grind of, you know, hoping that you can get through Q school or hoping that you can get in a Monday qualifier and play well and all that stuff. So it's a, it takes its toll, but it's a, you know, it's a journey that everybody's got a dream of doing it. And, you know, mine paid off eventually. So here we are.
Yeah. It's one of those things when I, you know, tell people that, but people who didn't play competitive golf, like, yeah, I played college golf. Like, man, oh, there'd be nothing. They think there'd be nothing more fun in the world than being a professional golfer. And I'm like, man, I don't know about that. I know a lot of professional golfers, and not a lot of them see that happy. It's not as much golf as you think. It's much better being a lawyer who plays golf, or not, maybe not a lawyer, but someone who gets to play golf 2 or 3 days a week and then doesn't worry about it. Because I remember when I quit like college golf, and I was like, oh, like this is my third stress fracture. Okay, I'm done. And it sucked being done. I was bummed for a while. And then like after a while, I was like, oh, like life is a whole lot easier when you don't have to worry about what your golf score is. Like school, I can do, like I always was good at school. And so, okay, I can just do school. That's way easier than trying to hit a ball around with a metal stick. Way easier. I might just keep doing that.
Yeah, I mean, it takes its toll on you after a while. It's, you know, stress, anxiety inducing, all that stuff. It just kind of weighs, especially like kind of when you get to my age and, you know, you've got a wife and wanting to have kids, and you're like, am I going to freaking chase a golf ball for the rest of my life? Like, this is no way to live.
And then it's also like, what else are you going to do? You're already there.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. But I mean, I will say, with all that being said, I'm extremely blessed. And I mean, there's nothing else I would rather be doing. You know, I don't want to be in an office. So this is the best thing for me.
What's it like? So as you said, you went 4 years through Q school with no status. How do you keep up hope that, okay, like, yes, like I didn't get Korn Ferry status this year, and obviously that's the best path there. America's is obviously, there's some inroads you can make there, but that's the best path there. How do you get through that, go through a year, not get it, and then, you know, obviously maintain hope and be like, well, I don't have status, but I'm going to play a whole nother year. Like there's other things to do outside of this. Because for some people, they don't make it. They're like, well, all right, like you get 365 days of waiting or 340 or whatever till first stage again. How do you kind of make it through the year and not let yourself focus on that?
I mean, it's just belief in yourself. That's what it comes down to. You truly have to know that you're good enough. Because if you don't, then you're not going to do it. Like just flat out, that's how it is. If you don't have the confidence to know that you're good enough to compete with the best players in the world, then you're not going to do it. And that's just, I mean, that's what I kept telling myself. I put myself in situations throughout that time where I was able to prove to myself that I was good enough. And that, you know, that's playing with guys that are better than me and just, you know, through tournament experience. It's just total belief in yourself.
When did you get married? At what point in your career did you get married?
We're coming up on about a year now, June 22nd. So,
okay.
Yeah.
And how long do you guys know each other before that?
So we started dating like right when COVID was starting. So that was early 2020.
Okay.
Yeah, so about 5 years now.
She's been in for the long haul then.
Yeah, she's seen the bad parts. it's kind of funny though. She, the first tournament she ever went to with me, I Monday qualified for the Wells Fargo in 21. And that was the first tournament she came with me too. And I told her, I was like, this is not how it is normally. Like this is your expectations need to be lowered greatly, because I promise you it's not like this most of the time.
That's hilarious. Yeah. Think it was just that easy. Oh, this happens every week.
Yeah. She's like, oh, this is nice. You know, there's people out here and, you know, I got stuff to do. And I'm like, it's not like that most of the time.
Tell us, where you live and, like, things you're doing outside of golf. Because you travel, you got all that kind of stuff. But I'm sure there's an off season. There's other things, especially you're married. That means you have other things you have to take care of. What's life outside of golf like for you?
I have way too many hobbies. Way too many hobbies. Obviously, like, getting married and having responsibilities there, living in a house now, like, you've got all that stuff to do, which that's not the fun stuff. But yeah, I mean, obviously, being for me now, like, it's obviously changed a little bit. Being at home is a wonderful break for me, and to get to spend time at home with my wife, whatever we're doing there, that does take up a good chunk of my time, because, you know, we're on the road for half the year. So kind of just soaking in those moments. But as far as hobbies go, I mean, oh my gosh, I love to play music. I play the guitar and the drums a little bit. So I love doing that stuff. I love anything sports related, obviously. In the fall, my life is consumed by South Carolina football. So that's a big thing in the fall. Wintertime, I like to hunt a lot. So I'll do that. Gosh, what else? I love anything gun related. Love going out and shooting. That's a blast. And that's also a great thing for me to do to kind of relieve some stress. So I like doing that. Oh my gosh, I could go on and on. Yeah, my wife always gives me a hard time because I have so many hobbies.
That's good. That's yeah. That's a sign of a working mind.
Yeah. Yeah. I like to keep my mind busy. I've gotten really involved in gardening now. I like to think I'm a gardening expert.
That's cool.
So yeah, that's a little hard to do when I'm on the road because I can't take care of it as much. But yeah.
I didn't grow up hunting, but I went out hunting this winter. A client of mine has a property. Went deer hunting, got up at the stand, sat up there for 12 hours, got absolutely skunked. Just totally skunked. And I thought, man, this was awesome. This is the first time, like, I've ever been able to sit somewhere outside with my phone, essentially, like, I don't have to worry about clients calling me. And I wasn't constantly doing something. I was like, man, I should spend way more time doing this. And my country club was like 40 minutes. We moved, so it wasn't near my house anymore. I was like, I should get rid of my club membership, and I should just spend more time hunting. And so that day I was like, yeah, I'm just dropping it. So I went, I hadn't been out there in 4 or 5 or 6 months. So I dropped it anyway. And then now this year, once deer season comes around, I want to be out of my client's property hunting a lot more.
Heck yeah, man. I mean, it's just like, that's really why I like it too. I mean, just being out in nature, it's so peaceful. Like, I mean, some of my favorite mornings is that I can think of is being out on that boat going duck hunting, just sitting there at 4 a.m. and just like looking up at the stars. It's incredible.
There's probably not a time that I'm closer to God than when I'm out there. I'm like, oh yeah, man, this is 100%. This is where he is.
Yeah, absolutely. That's, yeah, there's something very special about that. And I mean, I think we're, you know, we're drawn to nature and stuff like that. So it's
absolutely,
that's a special thing.
It beats a lot. So obviously we've talked a little about your background, talk some about sectionals, what you got coming up. And you said you were a field player. Tell us what instruction has been like for you. As you said, as things have gone on, you've tried out some instruction, some hasn't been for you, but tell us kind of your instruction background and what you're up to now in that regard.
Growing up, I went to a guy named Don Trahan. His swing theory was very vertical. Like, he wanted me to swing as vertical and like basically get my hands as high as possible in my swing, which has significantly changed since then. But that was kind of like the background. I honestly had a funky looking golf swing when I was growing up. But throughout the years, I've tried to shallow it out a little bit and to get more on the, you know, the conventional plane. And I started working with a guy named Sean Kennedy. We've probably been together about 2 years now. He's been awesome. He's a freaking genius. He knows so much stuff and is able to dumb it down enough for an idiot like me to where it makes sense. He really hasn't changed my swing that much. Just little things here and there. Like we try to work on tempo a lot. Like that's a very important thing for me. Like when my swing tends to get off, I like to get quick, like everybody. But like, you know, specifically like when I'm under pressure and stuff, situations like that. So really trying to work on tempo. There's a few mechanical things, like the way I was moving my lower body, kind of like to sway a little bit sometimes. So we're trying to get more boxed in, I guess you could say, and learning to kind of rotate more from a steady, constant position as opposed to kind of rocking back and forth with it. Those are kind of the big things. I haven't changed too much, I would say, recently, swing wise. But yeah, like really the chipping stuff is kind of where it's been noticeable to where I've changed a lot. He's helped me out so much with that stuff. He is one of the best chippers I've ever seen in my life. It's incredible what he can do with the golf ball and, you know, working on that vertical kind of steep feel to where the impact position is more constant. And it's constant through varying conditions. Because that's like the biggest thing. Like we play on so many different golf courses, so many different types of grass. It can get really annoying to chip on, like, you know, into the Grand Bermuda sometimes. I know that's everybody's worst nightmare, but really trying to figure out how to come at that a little bit steeper and attack the ball as opposed to, you know, obviously shallow where you're going to, you know, chunk it or blade it or just completely avoid the shot in general and putt it, which is what I was liking to do a lot. So trying to get away from that. I think that's pretty much it. I don't really work with anybody on my putting. I've always done that by myself. Like I said, I'm kind of a weird putter. If you get me on video putting it, like I just like want to close my eyes and not look at it. I don't mess with that too much with anybody.
How do you find that your golf swing changes week to week when you're on the road, say for a 4 or 5 week stretch? Like how do you kind of measure that? You said you're a field player. Like do you use TrackMan or a launch monitor to see where your parameters are at? Or is it kind of like, you know, figuring it out week to week, like what it's going to look like?
Dude, if you've got the answer for that, I would love to hear it. Your golf swing changes literally every round you play. If, example, we were in Mexico and the driving range, the way the wind was coming was, it was a crosswind coming from the left every day. And before that, I felt like I was hitting the ball pretty good. And you spend a week there hitting on that range every day. And by the time I left, my golf swing had changed so much because you're trying to either go with or fight that wind. So like there's going to be something every week I found that's going to want to like just very subtly change your swing. Actually, I take that back. I think saying change your swing is probably not the right thing. I think there's most of the time for me, I think it's a lot of alignment or just setup issues that just kind of start to creep in. So there is a checklist of things that I try to do, and I'm trying to get better at that too. I mean, that's a learning process there. But there are certain things I think that you can do as far as ball position, alignment and making sure that, you know, are my shoulders open? Are my hips open? Like, is everything squared away or whatever, you know, whatever you're trying to do for that certain time? Because like when I was hitting in that crosswind, I kind of started to ride it a little bit. And so I was kind of hitting like a big sweeping draw, just kind of going with it. I didn't feel comfortable hitting it into the wind. So by the time I left, like I was swinging very inside out. So yeah, I mean, that's something that right there is the thing that I think bugs pretty much everybody on a tour, is how the little things that are going to change your swing from week to week. And you got to figure out, I mean, you got to figure out what's going on, and you got to figure out how to get to a baseline. That's kind of the thing I've been working on recently, is establishing a baseline and being able to be comfortable with that baseline shot and then working off of that. So yeah, like it's kind of funny you brought up that question, because I mean, that's something I've been working on, I mean, in the past month, to try to get better at. I mean, like right now I noticed that I was again swinging a little inside out. Like that's my tendency, especially with hitting a draw. So I just stuck an alignment stick down there and made sure I was, you know, swinging a little bit more straight, and you know, you're able to fix it. But the problem is identifying the problem before it becomes a real issue. Like I said, that is a question that I don't feel like I have the answer to sometimes, but I'm trying to figure it out.
That would plague us as juniors. I know we'd also be like, man, I was hitting it good. And then like, you know, a couple weeks go by and you're like, man, I am just snap hooking the bejesus out of everything. And you get on track, man, and your path is now like into out seven. And it's like, well, yeah, like I'm good. Cause it's going to be tough to square that face up a bunch. And all you have to do is just clean that path up. But figuring out that that's happening while it's happening is a hard thing to do.
I would say it's very rare for your swing to actually get off. It does happen from time to time, but we've hit so many golf balls that the muscle memory is pretty much ingrained in how to properly swing the club. It's the little things, the setup, the alignment, all that stuff that your subconscious is going to try to change because something's off. Like you don't know it, but you're going to feel it, and your brain's going to try to fix it. And that's where the disconnect happens. It's not that your swing is changing per se. I mean, because you could look at a video of my swing from week to week and it's going to look the exact same, but I promise you, it's not going to feel the same. Like something's happening. So yeah, I think that's it.
Excellent. Before we get to final questions, I had a question about putting. You said that one, especially, you really don't like to mess with. It sounded like you have a big forward press. Tell us about what your putters, like the putter that you use is, the putter setup is, and kind of what you expect from your putter and what you've noticed.
So I'm putting with a Odyssey 7 slant neck right now. I've been using a lab for the past year. I just recently switched back to that, which you could go down the rabbit hole of that whole thing. I enjoyed using the lab, and my speed was really good with the lab, and inside 6 feet was really good, but I wasn't making enough mid-range putts for whatever reason. And kind of being able to go back to what's comfortable for me, just kind of giving it that little press and being a little bit more comfortable over the ball, I feel like that's helped me make a few more of those mid-range putts. But yeah, I mean, I have a little bit of a pop stroke, I would say. It's a little poppy, kind of like not quite like Brent Snedeker, but a little bit like that. So that's kind of how I putt, but it's weird, but it's completely reactionary. And like, I just kind of try to tell myself, and just when I'm putting, just be an athlete, like don't really worry about it too much and just, you know, just feel it. Like your eyes and your hands are good enough to know what to do. And just kind of, then you just got to let go and let it happen.
It's probably one of the easiest parts of the golf game to be athletic in some ways, because again, twisting, turning, swing and iron around your back and knowing where that club face is in three-dimensional space is pretty hard. But when you're right there with the putter, it's pretty, like, that's at least somewhat close to some athletic movements we do, throwing a ball, all that kind of stuff, mm-hmm. or at least relatively similar to it. Which lab were you using?
The Mez.
Okay. Okay.
I like the fang look. I've always liked the fang look, so that's kind of what I go with.
Yeah. I have the Scotty X5 because I like, again, same thing, fang look. And one putter I tried out, I think I'm going to get it. Even Roll has a zero torque putter. It looks kind of like the Spider, but with a hole in the center. But it had kind of like a fang look and a fang feel. I tried it out the other day. It was pretty impressive. The thing about a lot of the zero torque putters, I don't know if this is your experience. You have much better feel than I do. But sometimes it's just how the putter head is made. It just doesn't feel the same coming off the head. And I think it depends on what manufacturer it is and how they get to that zero torque, but it doesn't feel the same coming off the head. It's sometimes like, it's a little like, at least to me, it was a little jumpy off the face.
I don't want to talk bad about the lab putter at all, because I mean, I like using it. I might go back to it, but I think the biggest thing is because of the zero torque or whatever, you don't feel the face.
Interesting.
And yeah. So like using this putter, you can feel the face rotate, and it's been able to help me just like to feel it. And also like I immediately know if I hit it good or not. That was the thing that kind of I felt like was a little bit off with the lab, is I lost the feel of the face a little bit.
And it's probably too maybe a function of how long you've been using standard putters that torque. And so your forearms, hands, brain is used to making these adjustments that we don't even know that we're making.
Yeah. I mean, if the first putter he picks up is a zero torque putter, like that's probably going to be incredible for him. But yeah, it's a completely different feel. And I think it's really, really good for some golfers. But I've always said that it's a good putter, but it's 100% not for everybody. But putting is so unique in the first place that, I mean, that's why they make, you know, so many putters.
And to be clear, I'm a fan of the, I had the old DF 2.1. I used that in an arm lock in like 2021 or 2020. I got that in an arm lock and was crazy. I did pretty well from 8 feet and in.
Mm-hmm. The problem. Oh yeah. It's great there.
Yeah, the problem for me was I started playing on a golf course around here that had like a ton of break, and for some reason the arm lock, everything, it was just a little hard for me to play big breaks with it. I don't know why. It's stupid. It's just probably was the feel with the speed, how much variability comes with like playing 3% slopes a lot. Mm-hmm. But I really love the technology and what they did, especially, I mean, everybody's now, not everybody, like the big box are now copying everything that they've kind of.
Oh yeah, I mean, they changed the game. Yeah, they, I mean, every manufacturer has a zero torque putter now. It's crazy, yeah. And it happened in a year.
I couldn't believe how fast. I was like, man, this is, again, 5 years ago. This is really cool. I can't believe no one else is doing. Okay, Adele's doing it. They had zero torques that were like more normal looking. Axis had it, but really no one else, yeah, was doing it. Even Roll did one, I think, more recently, and then all of a sudden I see Odyssey has one. Like everybody has one. Is Scotty, do they have one yet?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, there's guys using them.
Which models are they for the public, or are they for, I don't follow equipment too well.
That I'm not sure of. It could just be a tour thing. I'm not sure. The ones that I've seen are mallets. There's no blades. I feel like a blade would look kind of weird.
It's hard to do it on the blade, because I've messed around with making my own zero torque like a long time ago. Back in 2020 and 2021, I started modeling some out that I was like, okay, what would I want it to look like? how do I get it to match up? And just getting that shaft to run through the center of mass. I mean, you can do it, but like doing that and having it feel like a normal putter is very hard, which is why, like, again, I like the lab, what they did with the blade. It's super cool that they have, but there was just something where you're like, this is not what I'm used to feeling, just odd setup. But a lot of their stuff, obviously, like a lot. Very cool. So that, I think we've talked about a ton today. And I know you got to prepare, got a good night's sleep for a long day tomorrow. The last question that we ask every guest is the same. And for you, it's going to be a two-parter. So one, if you go back to yourself as a junior golfer and tell yourself just one thing, what would that one thing be? And two, if you could tell a junior golfer just one thing, what would that one thing be?
If I could go back, I'd probably say not to try so hard. You know, you felt like, at least for me, like I've always been like this, but like as a junior golfer, like the weight of the world is on your shoulders in like this tournament that you're playing in. And, you know, you look back on it and you're like, how silly was that? And if I were to tell a junior golfer some advice, the things that I've seen in playing with some of them, these kids now, they have a lot of game. It's really impressive. The game's changed so much now that they have like, they have so much technology at their hands that they can, you know, their swings are pure and like they're hitting these shots that are incredible. Like I couldn't have imagined doing that when I was younger, but I mean, one would be just to have fun with it. If that, like, you know, it's not, it's a game. It's supposed to be fun. Don't let it wear you down, because trust me, if you want to play this game for a long time, you can let it wear you down later. Have fun with it. And the other thing I would say is have a very optimistic and happy attitude when you're playing. Because like for me, I was a little bit of a hothead growing up, had a little bit of a temper on the golf course. Like one time I'd smack my putter over my bag and I snapped all the clubs that were in the top part of my bag. So I pulled out the driver on the next hole and it was snapped in half, and all the other ones, I just kept going and they're all snapped. So yeah. Oh yeah. It was bad. That was a bad week for me. But yeah, just have fun with it. And like, I mean, if you're wanting to play at the next level, that is what every single golf coach would tell you, is what's your attitude like? That's what they're looking for. They don't look at the numbers that you're shooting. I mean, obviously they do look at the numbers that you're shooting, but they're actually very interested in what you look like and what your attitude is like when you shoot 85. Because that's going to tell them what your character is like and if they want you to be a part of their team or not. And I mean, I have had literally every single golf coach that I've talked to, college golf coach, has said the same exact thing there. So have a good attitude. Don't let it beat you down, and have fun with it.
Excellent. Where can people find you on social media? Where can they follow along?
So I guess I got Instagram. I think it's Keen_Husky. But that's it. That's my only social media.
Perfect. And if you're looking to find us on social media, find us on Instagram at @TheTournamentCode and on Twitter/X @TournamentCode. If you're listening to us on YouTube, Spotify, or Apple Podcasts, please like, subscribe, leave a rating, all the good stuff. Preferably 5 stars, but 1 star is fine too, as long as you let us know. Be sure to keep following along with us, and we appreciate you joining us as we dive in deeper to what it takes to play elite tournament golf.